Live from the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, and if it is the second Tuesday from 3 to 4, it is Understanding Autism, starring Paul Loudon and Kimberly Isaac. Guys and girls, how are you?
Doing good.
This is great.
Yeah, doing well.
Oh, good. I was waiting for that answer. Anyway, why don't you introduce yourself just a little bit. Paul, why don't you go first?
I'm Paul Loudon. I am a 31-year-old adult who was diagnosed with autism at the age of 23, and I do this show to talk about my experiences and perspective on the spectrum.
Kimberly.
And I am Kim Isaac. I'm a co-host of this show, and I'm an autism specialist. I have a professional certification in relationship development intervention, and I do this show alongside Paul to share thoughts so that people can better understand autism.
And which will then help people maybe relieve fears, maybe give them hope, and change their lives.
That would be great. That's the plan.
That's how I see this the show, the mission. So today we have an interesting topic, don't we?
We do. Actually, before we get into our interesting topic, though, we were going to talk a little, just briefly, about a couple of recent news stories. In autism.
Nice.
We needed to come up with a cool name for this segment.
I think autism in the news.
Something we're going to start doing a little bit of. A couple of things. One is, actually, this article was from just before the holidays, but Harvard Medical School, the Center for Biomedical Informatics, is looking into really researching different kinds of autism, or they've actually started to subtype autism through looking at a wealth of health information from people on the spectrum, looking at a lot of their other health-related issues, and they've been able to identify, they're calling it like three types of autism. And what's interesting about this is going to, potentially lead to help with understanding genetics, perhaps related causes, and also different potential treatments. So it was exciting to see that we're making some headway in terms of organizing some of the information and the data, and seem to be being able to sort some things out.
And this is a big deal, just because we've known for a while that, say, changing the diet and helping the diet helps some kids with autism an awful lot, and other kids not at all. And so we've known that, that there's different relationships between sort of the symptoms that they may have and the actual autism. And it's a lot like a broken leg, where you can have a broken leg because you were hit by a car, or you can have a broken leg because you slipped on ice, or you can have a broken leg because you have low calcium and you really need to, have better calcium intake to help ensure that you don't get broken bones in the future. And how you prevent symptoms of that broken leg and how you help that broken leg heal and what you do after the broken leg heals depends an awful lot on what caused it. And the same is true for autism. We know that it affects the brain, but we've also sort of known that there can be a lot of different ways that it can show up, where sometimes it definitely looks genetic, other times it definitely looks environmental, but we haven't really had really good solid studies in breaking down these different types and really, codifying them so that there's a taxonomy of autism where you can say that, this is type 3 autism, which we know is often caused by the parent having heavy metal toxicity, exposure, and this is type 4 autism, which we know is related to, bowel issues and so on. And then once you've got this sort of taxonomy in place, you can start talking about better ways to treat it and better ways to have early interventions because, you start knowing which signs to look for and what ways to help someone. So while this is an early study, they've already identified three broad categories, and there's always the potential for an awful lot more, but it really is research in the right direction towards really narrowing down and solidifying our definitions for autism in the physical sense rather than in the psychological sense.
And that's really what they've done. As Paul said, they were able to measure three distinct groups, and then they also have a fourth group, but they couldn't really be further characterized because they didn't have enough, they didn't have the data that they needed. But it is exciting because I think it's going to continue to evolve and be clearer for people. Because it is a spectrum, it can be really tricky sometimes. You start trying a lot of different things, but this is going to help pinpoint better treatment, planning, helping you to plan what steps to take.
Autism in the news.
That was one of the pieces of news we found. And then Paul actually sent me. Do you want to talk about the one you sent
I'll
me?
Let you introduce it.
Okay. Yeah, this is actually, some of it seems a little bit technical. So the simple version was that there has been a potential drug identified, a blood pressure medication, that has been shown to reduce or reverse autism brain activity in mice. And so, yeah, it's kind of interesting and a little bit complicated. I was looking through it, but what's exciting is they are making connections between looking at brain activity and how drugs are affecting, you know, reducing, like, and this focuses on a specific, again, a specific type of autism. So it wouldn't necessarily be a treatment for everybody, but for people that have, like, overstimulation of certain parts of the brain, or they call it something like overly excited brain circuit, that this medication has been able to reduce some of that to help sort of normalize the brain activity. And so it's preliminary.
So the key with this medication was that that the cause for the overstimulation was also specifically known. That in the case of these rats, was it induced? I think they induced the overstimulation and then they reversed it.
Yeah.
But and because and the medication also had to be applied prenatally, doesn't it?
Yes, they injected pregnant mice with it.
Even you know if this is useful on humans, at the moment we don't have a way of diagnosing autism that early, you know, unless we induced it, and that would be a bad idea.
Right.
So, you know, it wouldn't really, it doesn't serve any practical use yet, but it really shows that when you know enough about a specific type of autism, that's when you can start treating it physically. And that's, and the earlier you can recognize it happening, the better options you have in physically treating it. So this drug shows us that some types of autism are physical in a way that can be treated physically and that can be headed off in the past so that they get children who are not afflicted by the worst of autism or much or any of it, depending on, you know, how these rats develop as they grow older and experience rat life.
Yeah. And again, this drug was tested for two specific types of autism. And also, though, I thought this was interesting. I need to research this a little more. It does mention early clinical trials in Europe. Demonstrated that the drug diminished autism symptoms among 60 children ages 3 to 11. So it didn't really talk any further about that, but I want to research that because
it's worth finding out more about.
Definitely. That's kind of interesting. So again, I mean, we usually don't talk a lot about biomedical stuff, but this is really interesting because it's exciting to see that they're able to become clearer on some of these things.
And I mean, personally, I'm really passionate about biomedical investigation and treatments for autism, but I also know that I'm not a chemist, I'm not a neurologist, I'm not a scientist of any sort, and it's really probably a bad idea for me to comment on most biomedical stuff just because we aren't experts in that part of the field, and that's why we have Jim Adams on once a year if we can manage to talk about, you know, where
really
to go
with him. Twice a year.
It would be great to have him more. But,
I'll call him.
But we do want to present you, our audience, with these kinds of information when we can and when we, you know, feel we can present it in a way that doesn't allow us that much opportunity to say that thing, wrong.
But also, at a minimum, I can post the links on our Facebook they can read it for themselves for the specific. Some of the words, you know, the scientific terms are a little bit tricky.
And I can imagine right now some of the listeners have this particular question because I do. And the question is, is there a lot of research going on like this? Is it well funded with autism, or does it still need a lot of funding to do a lot more research? And if there was a lot more, maybe the quicker they would have more answers.
It definitely needs a lot more funding.
Okay.
I mean, it is. Everyone considers it important because there's so much competing for funding, and you know, there's a lot of research that's just more in the public mind. Cancer is, you know, a big one because everyone knows that they know someone with cancer, but a lot of times everyone knows someone with autism, but they don't know that they know someone with autism. And so it's a lot harder to really get people emotionally invested in autism research. And then because you need sample groups and things like that, it's a lot harder just for autism to get good sample groups and get good testing just because we don't know everyone who has it, we don't have good diagnosis methods, we don't have subtypes yet they're working on fixing, but when you test an intervention on a group, if you don't know the subtypes, when you say it only works on 26% of them, do you mean that that's a bad one, or was that 100% of a certain subtype and 0% of the other ones? You know, what does that result mean? So we still have a long way to go before our research is good, but we're getting there, and it needs more funding.
Yeah.
Well, that answers it, and so we want to encourage that too, don't we?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I know that the other thing I think is that there's, I mean, this initial work of the categorizing and clarifying is critical, but there's also a need for research. I mean, you have the genetic component, biomedical issues. You also have therapies. You know, some therapies have a good amount of research behind them. A lot of therapies still need that. So there's just a lot of areas within autism that, you know, need funding. And, you know, money can be an issue. I mean, especially these, I mean, parents, you know, who are going through, you know, autism with their kids, I mean, it's expensive to undergo therapies and treatments and stuff. So it'd be really nice for them at some point, you know, to know, to have more, you know, accurate data on, you know, where to start. But money is definitely, there's always a need for money when it comes to autism on the research side or the just the living side.
And there's always a need for generosity for people to contribute because, you know, it does take money to do this research, also to help people on the spectrum as well.
And that's actually something, one of our questions later, but I'm going to bring it up now is, you know, there's always opportunities to give. Usually locally people have autism walks. A lot of times the Autism Society of America has different chapters in, you know, in different cities. So if you're someone listening who wants to help and you don't know, you know, what you can do, that's something to look into as well. But
excellent. Well, let's take a quick break right now. And that was on Autism in the News, and that will be a regular segment, what, every second Tuesday. Excellent. I like it. And that keeps people informed. You always want to do that. This is Understanding Autism, like we said. Kim Bysik and Paul Loudon, and we'll be right back.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
At Beerenbaum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking Live here at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. And every second Tuesday from 3 to 4, Understanding Autism, as well as Monday, every Monday of the month, second Monday, I should say, from 3 to 4, is Understanding Autism. Paul Loudon is in studio along with Kimberly Isaac. And topic today, Ms. Kim, is...
Oh, is. I thought you were going to announce it.
No, I was just going to see if this is a quiz. Is rhymes with quiz.
Okay. No, we're going to talk today about what people with autism would like you to know, you meaning being people who aren't on the spectrum. So Paul has a lot of thoughts on this, and I have a few thoughts. But I think, Paul, I know you have some good places to start. So.
Well, I think... the biggest one, and this one is going to sound really, really obvious, but when you're living on the spectrum, it doesn't feel as obvious, and that's that I'm a person.
Mm.
That when you're on the spectrum, a lot of times when someone knows you have autism but they don't know you, you end up feeling like they treat you like a small child or something like that. Like the way that they treat you often isn't the way they treat other people. And while, you know, I do need help with some things, it ends up feeling like they don't see me as a whole person, that they don't see me as someone who can make decisions or, you know, whose decisions have meaning, who might have the same kind of wants or desires as them. That a lot of times it feels like they see me as something simpler than other people. And I don't know how to put it into words really well, but that is, you know, sort of the first and foremost thing is that, you know, while I may have, you know, differences in how I communicate, while I may have differences in what I understand and how I understand it, underneath it all is a person that typically has the same kinds of wants, desires, likes, dislikes as other people. You know, that, you know, people are different. They're extroverts, they're introverts. There are people who, you know, want to have a lot of friends. There are people who want to have a few really good friends. There are people who like ice cream. There are crazy people who don't like ice cream.
I got that one. I bet you like ice cream.
I do like ice
yes.
cream. There, and it's the same on the autism spectrum, that there are different people on the spectrum with different symptoms and different internal likes and dislikes and everything. And often, you know, when someone knows you have autism, you feel like they're thinking of you as a profile, as what they think of autism.
Or as a label, maybe?
A label, yeah, in some ways a label.
Sort of cold, isn't it?
Just different. Like,
yeah.
Just because someone's different in some ways doesn't mean they're completely different. I mean, they're still
right.
Human. They might have some differences that you don't always understand, but that doesn't mean you're
They narrow the definition, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the way that people who don't have autism treat people with autism feels exclusionary. And some of that comes from, you know, again, there's people who don't know anything about autism or people who do know about autism but, you know, don't really know better, where, like, I'll read articles and, you know, you'll see in an article say, you know, it's human nature to want to do this or it's human nature to have this expectation or it's human nature to whatever. And they define humanity in a way that's exclusive to people who don't think a certain way. And you're like, okay, so I'm not like that. Does this mean this person would think I'm not human? You know, what does this mean? So one big thing is that, you know, just we are a person. We may do things different than you. We may think different than you. But underneath, we get happy. We get sad. We feel lonely. We, you know, want to experience life. And we're people.
And treating you as such could help.
Does help.
Yeah. I mean, there's
right. Of course it would help.
But
it
I think
like the right thing to do.
But that's not as obvious either.
Yeah.
Listeners need to know.
To be honest, saying treating it that way could help is the wrong way to think about it.
Yeah.
Because you don't say treating Kim that way helps her. You say not treating Kim that way hurts her.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And with someone with autism, not treating them like a person hurts them.
Gotcha.
And it's a subtle distinction in a way, but it's important because that mentality, that treating them like a person helps, means that they aren't a person, but you treat them like one.
Mm.
Not treating them like a person hurts means that they are a person. You're starting from the
right.
thought process that they are a person. And, you know, know, I know you didn't mean it that way, but somewhere in your thought process there was a little bit of that. And when you hear that from everyone around them, every person you meet, then it starts to wear on you and it starts to tire you. And that's one of those things that I really want to change that habit of how people think, is that, you know, start from us being a normal person and work back to the challenge we have. Don't start from the challenge we have and work forward to the ways that we can act normal. That we're a person who has difficulty with this. We're not an autistic person who can still speak well.
And I think, too, sometimes coming from the therapy side of it, I think that some therapies out there, you know, not intentionally, but promote the other kind of thinking. When you start doing all these alternative things that wouldn't be, you know, communicating in certain ways or trying to get people to do things versus looking at them as a person first and really, I mean, obviously I do have a bias towards developmental therapies, but that's partially why, because humans develop. Yeah. It's not about let's change everybody, let's help them develop. And so I think it can be tricky because a lot of the, you know, attention out there to certain therapies and how sometimes people define autism to other people gives them an impression. You know, people are still talking about it as like this behavioral disorder. I think people's minds start looking for things differently versus just looking at the human side.
Yeah. No, I see. It's a good point. Point well taken that people, I think, get so wrapped up in the label.
And
restrict their definition.
And there's just a lot of parts of language that people don't really think about, you know, like phrases like human nature or what order you put in, whether you're saying it helps versus hurts.
Yeah.
That, you know, people usually don't have ill intent, but it's sort of wrapped up in the way that they already think about things, that it doesn't occur to them that the language could be hurtful. And it's one of those things that, you know, especially the neurodiversity movement talks about this a lot, but independently of whether you agree with their goals or not, it's still something that's important, is that you need to start from the starting point of they're a person, that everything is about dealing with their challenges, not helping them be a person, but helping them with the things that hurt their abilities to do the things that other people can do.
Yeah, or that they want to do.
Or that they want to do.
I mean, some people desperately want to do certain things, and their brains just don't, you know, they don't let them. So that's a good point. To kind of add to your, I had a comment actually from somebody that I work with, and this person actually has difficulty with verbal communication, so he wrote to me. But he said that he wanted people to know that people with autism are good people.
Mm.
And I thought that was really important because, honestly, in my experience, I mean, you do hear different things in the media and stuff, and, you know, sometimes people fear people with autism because, you know, some person has some undiagnosed mental condition but happened to have autism too, and everybody pins it on the autism or something. But pretty much every person that I've encountered has a really good heart. They're just very misunderstood.
Well, I mean,
and
there are bad people with autism, too.
Well,
I mean,
right.
But
as a whole.
Scientifically speaking, if you look at the statistics, there are less violent acts, violent crimes, violent activities by people on the spectrum than there are by neurotypical people. That having autism is an indicator you're less likely to commit a crime than a normal person, that you're less likely to steal something or hurt someone than a normal person. So when you have the room full of autistic people and the room full of neurotypical people, the one you want to be in for safety is the room full of autistic people.
And the media doesn't do justice to that.
No.
I don't want to – I mean, I'll just mention it real quick, but a very well-known newscaster – you know, something happened to some crime that, and I can't remember, it was a few months ago, and they were implying, they didn't say directly, and this person had autism. I mean, it was inappropriate. I mean, they were connecting the two, and they shouldn't have.
Well, they fear, people fear what they don't understand, and sometimes, you know, people who don't understand what autism is, they, you know, that's their only exposure. That's where it becomes even more.
Well, and there's two
dangerous.
Real ways it happens that are the problem. One is news is always sensationalist. So any time that you can get people interested or excited, that becomes part of the headline. I talked with Kim about this recently, that Subway is changing the ingredients of their bread. And instead of the headline saying, Subway removing ingredient banned in other countries, it was Subway removing ingredient used in yoga mats and shoe soles. And my thought is, why does it matter that it's used in yoga mats and shoe soles? Carbon is used in yoga mats and shoe soles, and it's in everything. That, you know, that in just in terms of what else it's in is meaningless. whether it's dangerous or not is meaningful. But
right.
people react emotionally to yoga mats and shoe soles. Ew, why would that be in my bread?
That was what I did.
And that's the same thing, you know, with autism is people are more interested when they hear that this killer might have had a mental disorder
yeah.
than when they hear this killer was an average everyday guy. And
yeah.
so anytime they can bring something like
and
that,
they do.
They do.
Yeah.
The other thing is that there's never good news. All news, or the vast majority of news, is about bad things.
Yeah.
And so you never hear autistic child saves a puppy, or autistic child mm-hmm. gives out hugs at school because kids were frowning, and that's what you do. You know, there's no cute, heartwarming story mm-hmm. about autistic people. All you ever – the only time you hear anything mentioned is bad people. But whereas – normal people are normal, they're not noteworthy. So even if you hear 500 killings by normal people and then one killing by autistic person, they remember the autistic
oh,
person
yeah.
because that was something different. And so that's what makes autism scarier is just the nature of how we recall events and the nature of statistics, that when something is normal and something is not, we remember the abnormal one way or another. So that's a really good point, getting people to know that we're good people and that the science bears that out, that, you know, that any statistic shows that we are good people, or at least as good as anyone else,
right.
possibly better,
right.
you know, statistically speaking, but at least as good as anyone else. And that
yeah.
kind of ties back into my person. We have the same sort of underlying desires and same, you know, sometimes we get angry, sometimes we don't. We often know better than to hit someone just because we're angry. You know, we're people.
Yeah. So
now,
do you
notice that with other on the spectrum, the same comment Paul has just talked about?
Oh, it is, yeah.
It's a very common thread.
Very much, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I mean, Paul's able to express it very articulately. I'm having trouble talking today. But yeah, I mean, everybody alludes to that in one way or another. And I think that this is their life. Like, I always think of this as, you know, people, they may have challenges and, you know, everybody has their own challenges, but this is their life. The people they're interacting with every day, you know, it helps at a minimum just for the closest people in their lives to just keep that in their mind. Because it's easy to get focused on therapy. We got to make them do this or get them to change this. It's like, just step back from all of that and go back to the basics of just life.
Do the caregivers also, does it extend to them or some of them that they feel they're a label too? Somewhat.
I think that, again, it's an issue of you really have to be consciously thinking about what you're saying. I don't want to point fingers at anyone, but I recently read a slide written by experts and read by many, many experts in the field. And the slide said, humans communicate by, and then described what, you know, I would talk about as neurotypical communication. Now, if it says humans communicate by, what does that mean they think of the people who don't communicate that way? What does that mean that they think of the people on the autism spectrum that they're contrasting with? They're saying we don't communicate in the way humans do.
Right.
And hundreds of experts have seen this slide, that it was a slide that had been used in previous presentations and things like that. And when I said to the person was like, oh my, I never even thought about that. This is really bad. But it hadn't even occurred to them that if someone on the spectrum read this, it might be offensive to them. And that's sort of the thing that I want to get people thinking about, is that you sort of have to be consciously aware of the way your language presents the contrast between autism and neurotypical, because it can be very exclusionary. And that's part of what leads to, you know, the depression that a lot of people on the autism spectrum suffer from, is that they feel excluded by the people around them all the time for various reasons. But you always live like feeling like an outsider with autism, and it's very difficult not to.
I think we should take a short break,
mm-hmm.
and then I have a follow-up comment to that. So let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion about what people with autism want you to know.
Birenbaum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday of each month from 3 to 4. It is Understanding Autism, starring Paul Loudon and Kimberly Isaac. This is a very important topic, Kim and Paul, for not just education, but to have people really look at the way they think of things at a conscious or unconscious level and really understand that how they think globally or whatever their belief systems were could be hurting people, and this is very important.
I mean, yeah, I think so. And one thought I just wanted to add before we move on, Paul has another really great second point on this topic, but it just reminded me from this therapeutic side that when people are a lot of times thinking about autism, they're not always including the person on the spectrum when they're doing planning and, you know, like for therapies or setting goals and things like that. And something I encourage people to do at the level that's appropriate is keep the person involved. Just remembering that, I mean, a lot of times people get in the mindset of we have to create this person's life or we have to do this for them. But, you know, keeping them involved at any age to what's appropriate, because it is their life. Any type of input that you can get from the person, that's always a priority.
Well, I mean, that's the question you should always be asking yourself is, am I trying to incorporate therapy into their life, or am I trying to incorporate a life into their therapy?
Exactly.
You know, what is the important one to you, and it should always be their life.
That's my school of thought. So, yeah, just wanted to throw that out there. So, so Paul, you want to share? You had a really, really great second point, main point that you wanted to bring up today.
The second main point, after remember that I'm a person, is that autism is real. And again, it seems really obvious, but you meet people who think that autism happens because parents didn't discipline their child enough. Autism, you know, is just laziness. Autism is all kinds of things. And they don't understand really the depth at which autism affects someone. That, you know, and this happens with a lot of mental disorders. This happens with clinical depression. People say, well, why don't you just think happy thoughts? You know, autism, why don't you just think normal thoughts? You know, but these things, it doesn't work that way. And it's really, really disrespectful to pull of a person to say that kind of thing to them. I mean, if you walked up to a person in a wheelchair and told them, well, why don't you just try to walk? You know, that would be horribly offensive. Mm-hmm. But people often have no qualms going up to a person with autism and saying, well, why don't you try harder? You know, or you know, well, why don't you just try to pay more attention to, you know, what's on their face? Or, you know, you say you have a hard time with motivation, but I think you're just lazy. You know, you wouldn't say that to someone with a physical disability that was recognizable. But because the physical disability is internal, because it happens in the brain, people often treat people with autism like this. And a lot of times this is most common among, you know, people who, you know, don't know anything about autism. But even, you know, experts will often, when someone with autism says, I can't, will take it as I don't want to or I don't understand what you're asking of me, and will ignore the fact that I'm really saying I can't. I need you to trust me on this one and believe me and treat me like a real adult, and when I say I can't do this, just drop it. You know, and it can be really hard hard to convince people that it's real, hard to convince people that it affects you as deeply as it does, hard to convince people that you understand that some challenges really are too much for you. And that's the thing that, again, for people with autism, we want people who don't have autism to know is that it is a real thing. It affects every element of our lives. We hate it as much or more than you do that we can't do some of these things. But that doesn't mean that we can just try harder and get over it.
Yes, and I hear that all the time from people who are able to talk to me about it is, you know, people will say, I don't understand why people don't believe me. You know, and I think sometimes it almost ends up being worse for the people who have more obvious skills and abilities. Because, you know, if you see someone with autism on the side of the spectrum that has some more obvious maybe motor skills, difficulties, you know, moving their body or they're unable to speak, your mindset does shift a little bit because it's more obvious that they're having some kind of problem. But when you talk to someone who's able to speak really clearly and well and, you know, on the outside looks a certain way, you know, I think it's a lot harder for those guys because people's expectations change. At least that's what I've seen.
I think I would agree with that, that the closer you are to seeming neurotypical, the closer you are to never having to tell anyone you have autism, the harder it is when you do need to tell somebody you have autism or you need to say, look, I can't do this and I really can't do this. And, I mean, you get that with employers, you get that with teachers, you get that with people who know about autism, people who don't know about autism. I mean, you know, if you looked at my life just in terms of accomplishments, I am a failure by what most people would consider accomplishments. You know, I dropped out of college several times. I barely passed high school. Every indicator that would indicate that I was bound for success. I had parents who had enough money to send me to college. I'm a white male. I was one question short of a perfect score on my SAT. My IQ is somewhere above 135. That on all of these indicators, I should be phenomenally successful by my age of 30. That I should at least have, you know, a salaried job, you know, in somewhere in the middle class. And I wasn't even able to come close to it. And even if I tried twice as hard as I did, I still wouldn't have been able to come close to it because there are parts of me that I cannot overcome myself. And they are challenging enough that I cannot get the help I need from the people around me because I can't explain what I need and they don't know what I need and I just run into walls. And so it's one of those things where if someone didn't know I had autism and I tried to explain it to them and they didn't know enough about autism or they didn't trust me, and they rarely trust you, then you know, it would be impossible for me to explain that this wasn't my fault, that, you know, that it isn't just because I'm lazy and couldn't be bothered to do this stuff, that I tried, I did everything I could, and it didn't work for me.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, again, and I'm just validating from other people I go with that on the spectrum that's, you know, it's a big component of their lives, and it is what contributes to a lot of depression and anxiety. And a lot of times people who, you know, again, lack of a different sort of term, but higher functioning, end up with more depression and anxiety because they are, you know, people are assuming things about them. They look the part, you know, like Paul's describing himself.
And they get expectations from outside on them, and that's
and
difficult.
And they're depressed, and especially because, and I guess this goes back to the good person and all that stuff too, is most of the people that I've known, they really do actually put in so much effort. It's unbelievable. Like, I don't know if I could do it. how much effort it takes for someone to do what I consider easy and natural is beyond my imagination. I just can't imagine. So here they are putting forth everything they have, and then to have somebody tell them you're not trying hard enough, I can't even imagine what that would feel like.
Well, that's like in high school for me, calculus was easier than hanging out with friends at a party. And that says something. I found calculus easy. You know, I took AP Calculus BC. I got a 5 on my exam. I was great at calculus, no problem. But hanging out with people, stressful, challenging. I was exhausted afterwards. My AP exam, I was done 20 minutes early and took a nap. You know, it's one of those things that people think that if you're successful at the things that are hard for a neurotypical person, then the things that are easy for a neurotypical person must be even easier for you. But they aren't. They're probably much harder for you in a lot of cases. And that's hard for people to believe because you can't get into a mindset where you can even imagine that most of the time.
Well, it really just comes down to a brain issue. I mean, parts of the brain are different. So if some person, you know, someone would say, wow, you know, Paul, you're so smart. Well, yes, on those things that as a culture, society, we've decided that makes a smart person.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean everything underneath it and around it and every other kind of brain thing means it's all there just because he's good at those.
Well,
that's
like,
thing.
You know, to a normal person, calculus and playing the guitar are both hard unless they've learned to do it. But let's take a normal person who's not learned either of those. Both of them are hard. You would never say to someone, oh, you've mastered calculus, so clearly you can play guitar now because it makes me just as easy. They're completely different skill sets, and people don't really recognize that these are different things. They use different parts of the brain that, you know, being good at one doesn't indicate in any way whether one, another one is challenging or not to you. And I do have one other point I'd kind of like to bring up in the what we'd like people to know thing, and that is that just because I have autism doesn't mean I'm wrong. And that's another one that sort of seeps into a lot of things, is when people think you have autism, they find it really easy to dismiss you. That they find it easy to dismiss your opinion on things, even things that are completely unrelated to the autism. Like, you know, if you have an opinion on a social thing, they might be even easier to dismiss you, but you might have an opinion on, like, you know, some statistics or something, or what polling data shows, or some random thing. But people often think that just because you have autism means that you can't think right about anything. And, you know, even things that I can't think right about, I may still be able to derive insight or come up with the right answer that, you know, that it often feels that people are very dismissive as soon as they know you have any mental disorder, but autism especially. And so the third thing is, just because I have autism doesn't mean I'm wrong.
That's a good point.
That sort of enters in.
That goes back to the being a person.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but it bears saying on its own, I think.
I agree. I think that's another excellent point. Do you want to take a quick break right now? And when we come back, I think this is just invaluable. In fact, we should probably summarize this a little bit more. And at least, hey, you can hear the replay on BreakRadioShow.com, BreakRadioShow.com, under Archives, Understanding Autism. We'll be right back.
Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Reidenauer, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Reidenauer, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking Live here at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, every second Monday and Tuesday of the month from 3 to 4. It is Understanding Autism, starring Paul Alden and Kimberly Isaac. You know, I really think, you know, out of all the shows, 2.5 years worth, they've all been excellent, great messages, and I just feel from a humanistic side, this message that Paul has talked about on this show resonates so much more with me than any other message. And thank you, Paul, for sharing this.
Well, I'm glad to. And just to give an overview to the people who are listening, you know, our show today was the things that those of us on the spectrum would really like people not on the spectrum know. And the 3 points that I really went into depth on were, one, that I am a person, and that even though I have autism, I want you to think of me as a person first who has challenges, not someone who is autistic who's trying to act like a person. Two, that autism is real and physical, and that the challenges that present me are very real and are something I struggle with all the time, and it's hurtful anytime you minimize them and act like, you know, if you were in my position, they wouldn't be a problem. You would have the willpower to get past them or whatever. And the third is that just because I have autism doesn't mean I'm not capable of giving opinions that are meaningful, that I shouldn't be minimized, that just because I have autism doesn't mean I'm wrong. And those are the 3 points that I really talked about in the last couple segments to share with people, you know, some of the things that a lot of us on the spectrum feel like we want to tell people every day all the time, but often don't have the words to do or don't have the opportunity to do, or just can't really do in a non-confrontational way. I mean, it's very hard to talk about these without sounding demanding and angry, and especially when, you know, it's an issue at hand rather than a situation like this.
And the good news is, to me, and Kim, you can comment too, you sound very passionate about it, and compassionate to those who are being hurt as well. And you don't sound angry, you sound just almost like a plea, hey, come on, world, you know, look at this differently.
You want to make a difference. You want people's minds to expand and think differently and see things more clearly.
Well, I think in the long term, this will be beneficial to people on both sides.
Oh,
yeah,
absolutely.
No doubt.
You know, and I think that, you know, most of the people who are doing this, treating us this way, wouldn't if they really realized what they're doing. But it's one of those things that we have so many things ingrained into our culture, the way we treat other people, the way we act, that it's just habit more than anything else. And while habit can be extremely harmful and painful to those of us on the spectrum, it doesn't necessarily seem backed with any antipathy, you know. So I feel sad that you're acting this way towards me, not angry most of
all. Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. So we've had a great show in terms of our topics and our news, and now we have a couple of questions that we're going to answer. And typically now on the second Tuesday of the month, towards the end, we're going to answer a couple of questions, but some of these are left over from yesterday's show because we had a question and answer show yesterday that if you missed, you can listen. You can go back and listen in the archives at breakradioshow.com. So I have one Paul question left, and I'm going to start with that. I think it's a good one. This is from a teenager on the spectrum. Paul, I find my mind wandering to video games or movie clips at various times during the day when I'm at work, particularly when things are slow and repetitive. It is getting me into trouble. I don't know how to stop it. Does this happen to you? If so, what do you do to get yourself back on track during important parts of your day?
I haven't really solved that one yet. To be honest, I found that the best way for me to avoid wandering off is to make the activity really dense. That, you know, part of it is just how the workload is scheduled. If I had, you know, 8 hours of relatively slow work, then I'd probably get into a lot of trouble. But if you take that same quantity of work and crammed it into 7 or 6 hours where I'm more active the whole time and I don't have any gaps where my mind can wander and I have to keep working the whole time, I'll actually finish it feeling both more energetic and will have wandered off mentally less. So I think that a key is figuring out your pacing. You know, we talk a lot about pacing on the show, and usually we mean slowing things down. But a lot of times for people on the spectrum, you know, you may be of average or above average intelligence. And in that case, pacing may mean speeding things up, because when you get bored, your mind can wander easily. And if you can find a way to make the work more active, if, you know, maybe you have a manager who you go to as soon as you're done and he gives you a new task rather than him coming around every hour to hand out new tasks. So and you know, maybe you can work with him in a way to say, you know, okay, since we have hourly tasks, you know, maybe I can go home as soon as I've got 6 or 8 tasks done rather than going home after 8 hours, since it's the same amount of work, but this way I can finish the work more quickly, you know, if that's the way that I work best. You know, that maybe works better with a teacher than an employer, depending on your employment situation. But if you have an employer that, you know, can work with your disability, that might also help. But looking at what your personal pace is, because I think most of the time when my mind wanders, it's obviously when I get bored, when whatever is in front of me isn't engaging. And a lot of times that's because it's too easy. It's not challenging me, or I'm already done with it and I'm waiting for the next thing, and then I wander off mentally and I miss the next thing coming in. I don't remember to check my email. I don't remember to whatever. So I think that for me, and the biggest tip I can come up with right now is learning what your pacing is and trying to match the pacing of your work environment to your mental pacing.
All right. That's great. That's a good answer. I have another question, and I love this one. It kind of relates to it actually relates to our news, but what causes autism and is there a cure?
We don't know yet. We know a lot of things that increase the likelihood of autism. We don't know any specific thing where we say, if this happens to your mother or if this happens to you, you will have autism. But we do know that, you know, certain nutrients, if your mother's low on them, you're 50% more likely to be born with autism. Or if you're exposed to these chemicals in your formative years, in the first 2 years of your life, you're more likely to have autism. So we know a lot of things that increase the likelihood of autism. But as I said earlier, that autism is, you know, a physical thing, and any physical thing can have multiple causes. A broken leg can be caused by all kinds of things. You know, a cough can be caused by all kinds of things. Autism can be caused by all kinds of things. And we haven't, you know, narrowed it down. We haven't been able to say this thing causes autism absolutely. We just know that certain things can cause damage to the way your brain develops. And these things, sometimes the damage can result in the symptoms that we know as autism.
All right. And we have another question. What can I do to help a person with autism?
Go back to the first and second segment of the show and listen to it again.
Well, I know my answer for yesterday, honestly, the first thing that always pops in my head is just kindness. I mean, I don't, even as a professional, I mean, I think going in with, you know, thinking of even work or help first isn't really a good idea. It's just to be like a person with them. I mean, I guess that's just my personality too. So I don't know if I'm crossing it over. I don't know.
I think, you know, you can simplify it all down to what often gets called the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Treat them like you'd like to be treated.
Right.
And that doesn't mean, like, you know, if you like people to buy you coffee, buy them coffee. It means that, you know, if you like people to buy you coffee, find out what they like to drink and buy them that. You know, learn about who they are and what's important to them and treat them in ways that interact well with that.
That's exactly the answer I had on my – I wrote out my answers for yesterday.
You've
been
looking at each other's answers.
I know. Well, no, I was learning about them. And also my other point was is just be open and remembering that you might be seeing things differently.
And read the Five Languages of Love because I think that book hits this topic perfectly. But Paul just said – it's not how you perceive love. How does the other one perceive love and give that to them?
The only problem I have with that book is I think that it breaks it into too narrow of categories.
I would agree. You've read the book.
Yeah. It does have a good overall premise, though.
Yeah, I would agree. Too narrow. But the concept is good. Do what they like.
Find out what works for them.
Yeah.
So.
Nice.
Okay, and I have another question here. Does autism occur in conjunction with other disabilities?
All the time.
Yes, and actually recently I just read the percentage of the 70% of the time a person with autism will also have what we call, like in the field, a co-occurring condition. So things like anxiety, ADD, depression.
Well, and a lot of other physical ones.
Medical.
So, low energy produced by their cells, gastrointestinal problems, things like that. And part of that is just related to the idea that autism is often caused by something damaging the development process, and something that damages the development of your brain also often damages the development of your body. And so all kinds of things go wrong, and often autism is only one of them.
Yeah.
And that, you know, helping some of them could help alleviate the autism symptoms, or once you start alleviating the autism symptoms, maybe the person can share that they're having stomach issues. You know, that it's really something that you need to take a holistic approach to treating.
Right, and looking definitely at the medical side, because the immune system, having a compromised immune system, neuroinflammation, seizures, sensory problem. I mean, there's just a long list of yeah, more physical things. And so those are our last questions. Actually, we had our final questions. I know we just have like a couple minutes left. So actually, Paul, do you want to remind everybody that you are going to be in Bali to be speaking?
Yeah. Well, there's a relationship development intervention training in Bali. And I'll be speaking a few times in the training to some of the people who are attending, and that'll be in late February.
Yeah, so we're excited about that, and hopefully we'll get some snippets, maybe of some clips of some of the things that you share so we can post them. I know you're going to be giving your culture talk, and that's been really helpful to people in the past.
And contact information, where do they get to see all your great stuff? Facebook?
Right now, the best way to get in contact with us and to see our stuff is to go to facebook.com/understandingautismradio and join us in the conversation there. You can find our archived show at breakradioshow.com.
So. Under archives and look under Understanding Autism. Great, great show, Paul. Thank you so much. Kimberly, this was great. And, of course, next month, another episode, Understanding Autism, the second Monday and Tuesday of the month from 3 to 4. Join us then. Have a great night.